From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Wall Street Journal reported on Wednesday that the U.S. military is preparing for a complete withdrawal of U.S. forces from Syria. The only indication that Trump gave on this surprise announcement was a cryptic tweet on Wednesday morning saying, "We have defeated ISIS in Syria, my only reason for being there during the Trump presidency." Well, the journal gave another explanation for U.S. withdrawal from Syria, saying the move follows a call last week between Mr. Trump and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who has threatened to launch an assault on America's Kurdish partners in Syria. The Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces announced in a strongly worded statement that the U.S. withdrawal would only lead to a resurgence in ISIS forces and destabilize the region. The group said in their letter, "The war against terrorism has not ended, and the Islamic State group has not been defeated, and that the decision to pull out under these circumstances will lead to a state of instability and create a political and military void in the region and leave its people between the claws of enemy forces." Russian President Vladimir Putin, however, welcomed the news of U.S. withdrawal, saying, "Donald's right, and I agree with him. Russia has been Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's strongest ally in the brutal war for years now, and routinely carries out bombing raids in the country." A day after Trump's announcement on Syria, General James Mattis turned in his resignation as defense secretary, apparently over the Syria withdrawal. My guest is Kani Zolam, director of the American Kurdish Information Network. Welcome to the program, Kani.
Thanks for having me.
Let's first talk about how U.S. forces had been conducting themselves with the Syrian Democratic Forces, with the Kurdish-led soldiers on the ground. What role has the U.S. been playing in supporting these Kurdish forces?
Well, when ISIS declared a war on basically the West and started kidnapping the Westerners and beheading them, the United States found out that the Kurds on the ground were some of the most effective fighters against them. So their union came about in October of 2014 when ISIS surrounded the town of Kobani and U.S. decided to drop air support, weapons, ammunition. And they fought the ISIS forces and kicked them out of the city. And then in the last 2 years, 3 years, they have basically driven them away from their land that they occupied. So it was a marriage of convenience, if you will. The Kurds were fighting for their freedom, but also fighting for the security of America, as well as France, as well as Germany, as well as England. It looks like now that marriage or that relationship has come to an end since Wednesday. Trump has said he wants to withdraw. The region was blindsided, if you will. Nobody expected this. ISIS is not, you know, done with, is not over with. By some accounts, some 30,000 of their fighters are hiding. In the vacuum, they will come back. They will fight back. The Kurds will fight for their freedom. They will not, just because the U.S. is not there. But the U.S. was providing air support, which was very critical. ISIS doesn't have air support. But now the new twist is that Turkey wants to invade this area, and Turkey has air force. The Kurds don't have that. And the Kurds, together with their Arab allies, were controlling one-third of the country in eastern on the eastern side of the Euphrates. And that area is now in danger of being overrun by Turks.
So the Turkish government has said that it will take over the fight against ISIS from the U.S. But, of course, the Turkish government's motives when it comes to the Kurdish soldiers fighting ISIS on the ground is very different, isn't it? What are the fears of Kurdish soldiers against Turkey? And what do they fear from Turkey, rather?
Well, the problem is the government of Turkey is an Islamist government. Erdogan doesn't shy away from wearing his, faith on his sleeve, if you will. And Obama was complaining that Turkey was allowing some had allowed some 30,000 to 35,000 foreign fighters to use Turkish border to enter Turkish Syrian border to enter Syria. The hope of the Turkish government was that, you know, the Syrian government would be toppled, Syria would be a satellite state of Turkey. Erdogan is not just an Islamist, but he's also a neo-Ottomanist. Ottoman Empire at one time controlled Syria, and he has these dreams of, you know, reconquering, if you will, if not territorially, at least making these areas very dependent on Turkey, on Istanbul, on Ankara. So his dream didn't pan out. Syria is destroyed, basically. But he hasn't given up. He controls a small segment of Syria in Afrin, in Al-Bab. And he wants to now, is threatening to take over Manbij and take over Kobani. Two people can stop him, or two countries can stop him. One is U.S. and one is Russia. Russia is an ally of Assad. U.S. With Trump in the White House, it's very hard to read him. It's very hard to predict what he might do. But the Kurds are there, and they feel like they contributed to security of the West, and they want some dividends. Just to give you an example, in the liberation of Raqqa, the Kurds lost 653, the Kurds and their Arab allies, fighters, and the city fell, the capital of Islamic State, in October of 2017. And they hoped that this relationship, as I said, would continue. But it doesn't look like it. Now Trump wants to pull out. He could still do Kurds some good if he tells Turkey not to invade, if he provides air protection. The Kurds are not, they don't need, they can fight the Islamic State fighters, they can even fight Turkey if need be, but they don't have the air support, air cover, and that's their vulnerability.
Now, the news reports are pointing out that Trump made his decision to withdraw on Syria entirely unilaterally after a phone conversation with Erdogan. It sounds like Erdogan was able to convince Trump that it was in Trump's best interest to simply withdraw all U.S. troops and that Turkey would take over from the U.S. But of course, it sounds more like Turkey trying to gain its own regional power in the area. Now, of course, it's not necessarily clear whether the U.S. was going to was really playing a positive role in Syria with its presence on the ground, except perhaps in the case of supporting Kurdish forces. Would you agree that that was potentially the only positive role that the U.S. might have been playing militarily in a war-fighting arena currently?
Yeah, well, that's a good question that you're asking. I mean, U.S. wasn't there. U.S. came there in October of 2014 because Americans were, you know, beheaded by ISIS fighters and ISIS militants. And if you recall, James Foley, for example, was, you know, beheaded, and his horrible deed was, you know, put on YouTube. So U.S. felt compelled to go in and crush this menace to its citizens who were traveling, let's say, abroad, and some of their sympathizers struck here. The Kurds felt, you know, U.S. would help them. For example, they could become a party to the Geneva peace talks with the Assad government. And Syria would have a decentralized government, a decentralized constitution. And U.S. would, you know, because Kurds had helped U.S., U.S. would help them in diplomacy, if you will. And this is still the hope of the Kurds, but it's not working out. It's, you know, Trump is having problems here. He wants to change the debate with, if you recall, a few days before this, a sitting judge called the first national security advisor of Trump a traitor. You know, and he comes from military. I'm talking about Michael Flynn. You know, this is a very serious charge to level against one of the most important positions in the U.S. government. So Trump managed to change the debate. Now nobody talks about Flynn. But it's not the way to, you know, conduct this business. If this is the way U.S. treats its allies, the people who shed their blood for U.S. and for the West, you know, the U.S. will have a harder time making friends. And U.S. may have to leave the region, not just Syria, may have to leave, may be viewed as unreliable in Iraq, in Kuwait, in Saudi Arabia, in Egypt. It has a lot of relations with these countries.
Right. Unfortunately, of course, the U.S. doesn't really have a good track record to begin with. Militarily in the Middle East, we know that Trump has announced a withdrawal from Afghanistan, not a complete withdrawal, but withdrawing half the troops there. That war, the U.S. certainly has not been playing any kind of a role. It spent 17 years simply, you know, worsening the situation in Afghanistan with the Taliban no weaker than it was, say, about 10 years ago. But on this issue of just the relationship between the U.S. and the Kurds, let's remind our audience about the history of betrayal between the U.S. and Kurds in another country, Iraq. This is not the first time that the U.S. would be basically backstabbing its allies, Kurdish allies. And some have said maybe it was naivete to trust the U.S. in the first place in Syria because of what happened in Iraq. Remind us of the Iraq situation.
Well, again, you ask a very good question, but in Iraq, it was Nixon administration. It was Henry Kissinger urging us to fight central government in Baghdad. It was the CIA that was providing weapons to us. And the Kurds, unfortunately, took the White House's word. They thought they would, you know, hold on to their gains. They were for a while, they were successful. But then the Shah of Iran and the president of Iraq, Saddam Hussein, met in Algeria in 1975. They agreed to end their border issues. And that meant Shah stopped providing weapons to the Kurds who were fighting Saddam in 1975. So the Kurds were basically sold out to Iranian geopolitical needs. When Kissinger was asked to testify before a Senate committee, why did you urge, did you ask these people to fight, to believe in us and to fight for their autonomy, and then you abandon them? He said, well, missionary work and covert action should not be mixed, be confused with one another. That is a fact of life. In 2014, though, the situation was a little bit different because it was Americans who were being hurt too. It was, you know, the ISIS sympathizers were attacking in San Bernardino. They were attacking in Orlando, Florida. They were attacking in New York, in London, in Paris. So the West felt, they should invest in the Kurds for their own security. And we thought, you know, it was not just covert action. It was actually the security of American cities too. And it is still the case. We still feel that, not because of us, but U.S. and the coalition forces may have to come back to the Middle East. ISIS and its sympathizers are not exactly the type that you could sit down and talk with. They have an ideology that wants to, challenge the West. And so, but it's, as we speak, it's not, I mean, we're at a dead end. And Kurds are now going to fight, if need be, the Turks. And they have been battle-hardened for the last 7 years. They have been fighting ISIS and its derivatives. They will fight Turkey too. But they would prefer not to fight. They would prefer to make that part of the country, safe. The only choice they have is right now is to go back to Assad and to go back to Russians and to prevent Turks from invading this part of the Syria.
Kani, what is at stake with respect to withdrawing U.S. Forces? Because Trump is basically defended his actions in withdrawing U.S. troops, saying that that American lives are at stake. But were American lives really at stake in defending the Kurds and helping against ISIS?
That's right. That's a good question, too. They were not really. Americans were not in the fight. They were basically helping the Kurds from behind lines, if you will.
So it was more of a defensive posture than an offensive posture.
Yeah. I mean, President Trump, you know, said on his White House video that he was having a hard time writing letters of condolences to the soldiers, fallen soldiers. In Syria, you know, very few have died, and they died. Some of them have died. You know, it's not like the people who have done the dying is the Kurds or the Arabs. A few have died in Iraq too, but I mean, I'm not saying dying is good. Don't get me wrong, but it's when you're in the military, their dying comes with it, if you will. But it wasn't that the Americans were in the front lines. It wasn't that the Americans were actually fighting. It was more Trump, I think, in my opinion, he wanted to change the debate in the country. His impulsiveness moved in, if you will, and then he decided to say that he's going to withdraw. We'll see. I mean, I don't think the region is safe. I don't think unless he prevails on Turks, I don't know what. We don't know the content of that conversation he had with Erdogan. But if he lets Erdogan attack, then we're going to have more refugees. We're going to have more fighting. What is left of Syria will be completely turned into a black hole, if you will. We'll have more instability in the region.
Now, unfortunately, even on the left here, the conversation around war tends to be a little bit black and white. I mean, generally, war is not good. Generally, the U.S. military has not been really defending human rights. Generally speaking, the U.S. has only done damage with its war fighting. And are you worried that the conversation around the announcement of U.S. withdrawal from Syria, it misses the point a little bit because... You have hawkish Democrats angry about the withdrawal of troops from Syria as well. Nancy Pelosi and others upset about this. Lindsey Graham, Republicans, hawkish Republicans as well, upset about this. And one doesn't necessarily think of Pelosi and Lindsey Graham as defenders of the Kurds, more defenders of the U.S. military. Are you worried that the left is going to also write off the Kurds in a way that Trump has written off the Kurds?
Yeah, that's a debate that I've been watching and following on Twitter too. I mean, my answer to that is this. Yes, Americans should invest in their infrastructure. Yes, U.S., you know, shouldn't be waging war around the world. The problem is a little bit different, though, in the Middle East. U.S. has been supplying the oppressors of the Kurds with all kinds of sophisticated weapons. And they have been using these weapons to shed the Kurdish blood like water. So
the U.S. is playing both sides against the Kurds, like it has played both sides in many other situations.
Well, I mean, like the left needs to know this. Like mm-hmm. When I talk to my friends who are, you know, very leftist or liberal, I tell them, listen, you know, there's that element too. Like, for example, in October of 2017, Iraqi army using American weapons in cooperation with the Iranian intelligence agents took over the city of Kirkuk, which is, you know, about 70% Kurdish from the Kurdistan regional government. If Iraqi army didn't have American weapons, in my opinion, they wouldn't have been able to take over this Kurdish city and make the region more unstable. Turkey, for example, is you know, using American weapons, NATO weapons, to cause instability in the region. It's like in Syria. Why is it in Syria? It shouldn't be in a sovereign country.
So finally, just in the last minute, Kani, then it sounds like, you know, would you say a fair position, a fair anti-war pro-Kurdish position could be that the U.S. could, you know, while withdrawing troops from Syria, use its diplomatic leverage to hold Turkey back from massacring the Kurds?
That's exactly what happened in 1991 in Iraqi Kurdistan. U.S. imposed no-fly zone, and that's exactly what the Kurds in northern Syria want. They want a no-fly zone. Mm-hmm. They're capable enough to fight Turks or as well as ISIS types. And they feel like they invested in America's security, in the Western security, and that this is the least the West can do for them is to protect them from the air.
Well, Kani, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, helping shed some light and nuance onto this issue. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Same to you.
Kani Zulam is director of the American Kurdish Information Network. We've been discussing the ramifications of the U.S.'s withdrawal from Syria. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo. Thank you so much, Kani.